Lord, may the words of my mouth and may the meditation of all our hearts and minds be acceptable and pleasing to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. All right, if you looked at the title of the sermon in the bulletin, it says Facing Disappointment. And so I was stewing on what kind of disappointments I've faced in life, and shamefully to admit it, the first thing that came to my mind was when I had those wish for presents to receive and I was disappointed in getting something else. No offense. Like, how am I supposed to say this with my parents in the room? But anyways, the greatest being when I really wanted a snowboard and I got a body pillow instead, the same shape and size, but a pillow and a snowboard, one you can snuggle, one not so much. But anyways, so I thought about presents and I was like, no, too materialistic. And I thought about friendships and relationships when I've been disappointed in losses or rejections or whatever. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to drudge through that. And then I fell on jobs. And I thought, ooh, interesting. And I thought about, you know, jobs that I had applied for and I didn't get. I mean, the time that I got rejected from working at Chili's, that was a big disappointment, didn't get that job. And other ones that I applied and it didn't quite work. And it's like, you know, I was disappointed and it was like, oh, now I got to go find something else. Or when a job I lost because there were some that things just weren't working and had to walk away. And it was like, ugh, it was really an inconvenience. And there was a, you know, have you been there? Any of you haven't gotten the job that you wanted or had to walk away from one? You know what I'm talking about. But there was this one time where the disappointment was different. When I was in college and I was 20 years old and I was working with my first youth group. A friend of mine was the youth director there and she said, why don't you come up and help me? And I'd been helping with that youth group for just about a year and absolutely loving it. I loved the youth. I loved the program. I loved the church. I was teaching the junior high Sunday school, and I was teaching a midweek Bible study and helping with the youth program and just loving what I was seeing happening in these youth and loving everything that was involved. And she came to the point where she felt like her time was up in what she was supposed to do with that youth group and that program and decided it was time for her to move on, which meant the church needed to hire somebody to replace her. And I didn't really think twice about it. I was helping, and that's what I was doing. And then one of the associates came to me and said, you should apply for the job. Are you going to apply for the job? And I was like, no, I hadn't thought about it. I'm doing what I'm doing, and I love what I'm doing. And I was working full-time in the preschool at the church, so I had a job. I didn't need a job, and going to school full-time, and I had enough on my plate. And she said, please, 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 will you apply? I think you'd really do great leading the youth program. And so finally I decided, okay, I'll apply. So I applied and had my first experience sitting in front of an SPRC. And let me tell you, if you're 20 years old and you only have a limited amount of jobs you've applied for and there's never been more than two people that interview you in those jobs and all of a sudden you're sitting in front of a committee of 10 SPRC people that all have all these intense questions they're asking you, it's a really freaky experience to go through and extremely intimidating, I hope you know. But good preparation for later in life. Anyway, so I sit through the committee, and I'm really proud of my answers and of what I'd been saying. I'd been able to talk about what I'd been doing with the youth and what I'd been doing with the district and helping with camps and really feeling good about that. And then there was another person that had applied that had kind of been working with the youth group on and off and had applied also, and she was older than me. Well, when the answer came back, what I was told was, you know, we really loved your interview and we really loved what you had to say, but we just kind of feel like you're too young to lead the youth group. And so we're going to go with the other person. And that kind of disappointment, it wasn't the same disappointment I'd gone through. This was a disappointment that really cut into me in feeling like I was there for a reason, feeling like I had interviewed for a reason, feeling like I really thought that God wanted me to take that youth program and that God really had plans for what I could do, and really disappointed because I thought the other person was applying for a job and not a passion like I was. And I was really heartbroken and thinking, what is this going to do with this youth program if this is the case? And so I walked away really absolutely disappointed and what had happened, and really disappointed that it came down to not what they thought I could do with the program, but really disappointed that it came down to my age and something I couldn't do anything about. Well, I very easily could have looked at that as God slamming a door in my face, but just 2 or 3 months after that, a friend of mine that was a youth director said, you know, I know that you're just volunteering with that youth program. There's a church just down the road on the other side of town that really needs a youth director. I think you should apply for it. Well, my little broken heart is saying, no, I've been told I'm not old enough to do that job. I've just been disappointed. I don't want to go through that process again. I don't think I could take hearing you're not old enough twice in just a few months. And so she talked me through it, and she made me pray over it, and eventually she got me to write a letter to the pastor of that church, introducing myself and saying such and such told me you're looking for a youth director. I'm willing to apply if you're still looking for someone. And the senior pastor called me back, and she sat down, and she met with me and talked with me and said, I want to introduce you to the SPRC. I want you to apply for this. And so I went through it, and I sat down in front of another SPRC, another really intimidating experience, because that SPRC, at least I knew people on it. This one was all brand new people, and sat through and just was myself. And lo and behold, they hired me. They could see past age. They hired me, and what started as a 20-hour position that summer, by the next summer, was a full-time job and turned into 5 years of incredible ministry and became the place where God confirmed my call to ministry, gave me phenomenal mentor pastors that helped me through the process and got me to where I was. And so what started as disappointment and heartbreak led to where God really needed me to be. And so that story of disappointment is what leads me into the story of Lazarus and Mary and Martha. You see, in this story, we've got Jesus, who obviously has an established relationship with these three, an established relationship with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, that he's been in their house, he's dined there, he's taught there. It talks about Martha, who's going to be anointing his feet with oil. And if you didn't pick up, John's saying, this is the one that anointed Jesus with oil, and that's in the next chapter. He's talking about what's about to happen. But there's an established relationship here. And Jesus is doing ministry with his disciples, and he gets word that Lazarus, who he says that he loves, not just acquaintance, not a stranger, not a person passing on the street, but a man that he loves, somebody he would consider a brother, is sick. And Mary and Martha, in their desperation, they know exactly where to go. And they send word to Jesus, please come quick. The one that you love, Lazarus, our brother, he's sick and he's not going to make it, and you need to be here. And now try to hear this story, not with the ears as one that knows it, not as one that knows the whole Gospels and has believed, but try to hear this story from the perspective of somebody that doesn't know Christ or is just trying to find out about him, is just in the first steps of seeing if this faith is for them. And try to hear these words from that perspective. And when Jesus heard this, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so when he heard Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 days. What would that do if you're trying to find out who Christ is, who this person is that millions and billions of Christians have followed? And you're just getting introduced, and he loved him so much, he stayed where he was and did nothing. Imagine that disappointment. So many would read the story, and right there at those words would say, no, thank you. Somebody who loves somebody so much, they reject them, they say no, they stay where they are for 2 days. Why would I want to follow him? And now imagine Mary and Martha. Imagine sick Lazarus that gets back the word he's not coming, that he doesn't make it there in time, to feel that disappointment, that they believed in him and knew him enough that they'd been seeing what he had been doing. They'd been seeing him heal people and drive out evil spirits and make the lame to walk and the blind to see. These people that he didn't know, these strangers on these streets. people who were unclean, people who were sinners, people who didn't deserve it, and he was changing their lives and healing them, and here he won't come to the one that he loves, and what happens? But Lazarus dies. Talk about disappointment. Have you been in that position? Have you been the one on your knees crying out to God and begging God for yourself and the pains that you're feeling or the struggles you've been going through? Been on your knees praying for somebody you love? God of healing and hope, I know what you can do, and I believe in it, and I believe in your son, and I believe that all that's been done, please be here in this moment. I need you desperately. Have you been in that place and felt the disappointment when the healing didn't come, when the hope wasn't seen, when it seemed like God didn't answer when you needed him the most? It must have torn at those sisters. I mean, I know what it was like to have that door slammed in my face on that youth ministry position. And if I felt that heartache that much, and that was just a job and a position, what must they have felt when their brother took that last breath and Jesus wasn't there because he chose not to? Oh, the heartache of all heartaches. But the story takes a turn, because it says after 2 days, after it's definitely too late, it says Jesus turns to the disciples and says, let's go. The disciples are like, why in the world would you go there? We were just there and they ran you out of town saying they want to stone you. They want to kill you for what you're doing. We need to stay out of there. We need to keep you safe so you can keep doing what you're doing. And Jesus says, we have to go. Lazarus is sick. And those disciples, I love those disciples. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Peter that was the mouth of the disciples that says, okay, he's sleeping. Sisters can wake him up, right? And what do we get? But we get Jesus that goes, okay, they're not understanding me. And I can see him right in their faces. Okay, I'm trying to tell you, Lazarus is dead, right? I mean, that's what he's doing right here. If we could read it from those 2,000 years ago perspective, it's Jesus in their faces. Okay, hear the words I'm saying. Lazarus is dead and I need to raise him. It's not a natural sleep. They're not getting it, but he's giving it to him. They're thinking, okay, he's dead. Why would we go there? And he says, I got to go wake him up. I got to go bring him back to life. And I love Thomas. Okay, let's go and we'll die with him, right? And so off they go. They go at risk of his life. They go when it seems like it's helpless, hopeless, nothing can be done here, right? When you get to the point that somebody's dead, that's it. But he gets not too far off, and Martha hears that Jesus is coming. And Martha takes those feet and goes running out of the house to meet him. And she comes to him, if you would have been here. But here's the difference. We get these two sisters. And more than once, we get this of how they differ. And let's see how they differ, because here's Martha. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But then she says, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. She doesn't know what she's asking for. She doesn't know what she needs. She doesn't know what Jesus can do in this moment, but she says, I have faith you can do something. That if you ask God, that it will be granted. And I have faith enough to know something can be done here. And I ask you right on the road, what can you do? She doesn't feel that door slammed. She still sees hope with the faith that she has. And Jesus explains, I'm the resurrection and the life, right? She says, yeah, I know, right? She's been there when he's been teaching. She's been listening to his words and paying attention. She says, I know. When the time comes, he will be raised like the rest of us. I've heard you. Yes, I believe that. But that's not what she's looking for. That's not what will satisfy her. And so Jesus is clarifying again, anyone who believes in me, though they die, they will live. He says, do you believe this? Do you believe that there can be life after death? And Martha says, yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who comes into this world. And she takes that message back to her sister. She heads back to their house, and there Mary is, surrounded by faithful Jews, having their wake, having their time of mourning, supporting her in her loss, being that community they're called to be. And Martha comes in and she pulls her to the side and she says, the Messiah, the teacher, our friend Jesus, he's out there and he's asking for you. And so Mary immediately bolts from that house, enough so that the rest of them are going, where's she going? She must be going to weep at the grave. We need to support her. And so they all go following along with her. And she gets to Jesus and I hear a very different response. As it talks about her crying and falling at her feet, I can just see her fists pumping, weeping at him. Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. The deeper of the disappointment there, that's the end, the period after he dies. You, my friend, failed me. You weren't here. And I'm grieving because you weren't. Mary's so upset sitting at his feet, so upset, and the rest of the Jews so upset believing that he couldn't do it, letting him know, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? And I believe that we get this verse about Jesus weeping. His soul unable to take it anymore, that tears flow from his eyes, not because he loved Lazarus so much, not because Lazarus is dead, but him feeling disappointed that those who knew what he was capable of, those that had known him, those who had seen what he had done, yet couldn't believe that he could overcome the situation. And that disappointment in the lack of their faith, I believe, is what causes our Savior to weep in that moment. But here he says, the story's not done. He says, let's go to the grave. And they get there and the stone is in front of it. And he says, roll it away. They say, why would we do that? It already smells. He's been in there 4 days. That's past the part of hope. That's past the point of anything happening. All we're going to get is a foul odor and a reminder that Lazarus is dead. And here we're trying to grieve it. Here we're trying to reconcile with it. And you just want to reopen those wounds by opening that tomb and reminding us of what happened. And Jesus says, roll it away. And they roll away that stone, and he prays to God, yelling out, Father, I thank you that you've heard me. He says, I always knew that you hear me, but they need to hear it, and so I say it for their benefit. I call out to you for their benefit so they can know who's behind this. And he shouts to that tomb, Lazarus, you get out here. And Lazarus comes walking out of that tomb, covered in his death shrouds. And Jesus proves in that moment that he can overcome death. Jesus proves that there is no point of no return. He proves that there is nothing he can't overcome. He proves that God is capable of all things in all situations. And he gives a foreshadowing of what's to come in his life. And so here Lazarus comes in front of them. Lazarus in those cloths all bound before him. And what does Jesus do? But he turns to that crowd. He turns to Mary and Martha and the Jews, and he says, unbind him. But you see, here's where I think we get stuck in this story in our lives. I think that we feel those moments of disappointment. I think we all feel those times when we have poured out our soul before God of what we need, and we've felt that disappointment when we haven't gotten exactly what we need, exactly when we got it, and we feel that heartbreak, and we wonder what's going on. We wonder, was my faith not enough? We wonder, is God not big enough? We wonder, does God not care about me? We wonder, is God not capable? We have all these wonderings. We have all these heartaches. We have all of this that just wants to scream out. And God brings life where there was death. And God opens another door. He makes another way. He reveals the plan that he has. And we see it. But I think the trouble comes when we refuse to take off those death bands. When we hold on to that disappointment, when we hold on to that anger, when we hold on to that which we wanted, and God said that's not it. We hold on to it like those death shrouds. We keep dragging it up. We keep bringing it up. It makes it so that we can't fully live in joy in what God's put before us and the new life and the new opportunities and the new blessings that he desires for us to give, because we just want to hold on to that past. And Jesus says, unbind. What does he want? He wants hearts unbound. You see, I could have been so angry at that rejection. I could have been so frustrated in the word that I got that I could have refused that other job and said, no, I won't do it. I won't set myself up for that heartache. I won't do it because I've felt this disappointment. But if I had said no, holding on to what I'd heard, I wouldn't be standing here today, and I believe fully that this is where God wanted me to be. He just had another path for me to get there. If we hold on to our disappointments, if we hold on to our angers, if we hold on to the plans that we had, we miss out on the blessings that God has for us. We can miss out on seeing the doors that he opens. We can miss out on the new relationships and opportunities and jobs and joys and lives that he wants to put before us, because we want to be paralyzed by that past. But God has plans. God has plans. And why did Jesus do this? He said right at the very beginning, he said that he wouldn't be there on time, because it is for God's glory and so that God's Son might be glorified through it. Sometimes God needs us to be disappointed in our plans so that he can be glorified in his plans for our lives. And I end it with this story of a man named Oswald, who in the 1920s wanted nothing more than to be a missionary. He wanted to go out and change the world and save lives and be out there in the thick of God's children. And so he started the process and he went through everything and he was so excited and he got to the final interview. If he passed that interview, then they'd send him out somewhere. So he goes through the interview and he gets to the end and he gets denied. They said, "You aren't what we're looking for. We don't think this is where you should be." Well, Oswald could have walked away disheartened, disappointed, and done. But instead, he decided to go into the ministry. And he got appointed to a church in Ontario, Canada. Well, in the work that he was doing there and the passion that he had, his church became the church sending out more missionaries in the world than any other church. And almost 100 years later, is still doing just that. God had to disappoint him that he wasn't supposed to go, but that he was to train, equip, and send people to do that job and reach more corners of the world than he ever could all by himself. Because he didn't shut the door with disappointment, but he let God open the door for God's plan. He took off those death shrouds of disappointment and lived for God's glory in the work that he was doing.